Game on 2FM with Green Firm. Healthy snacking made easy with Green Firm's high protein on the go range. Available in selected Tesco, Super Value and convenience stores nationwide.
Thanks to the superstar Jenny Green. Back tomorrow, kicking off the weekend with Bonkers, Pictionary and the Hometown Takeover. And as always, the best tunes. It's Thursday, the 7th of January.
It feels like there's been far more than 7 days so far this year.
It's crawling.
It? Yeah. Anyway, coming up between now and 7 o'clock, we're going to chat shortly to Republic of Ireland international Louise Quinn on life in Italy and playing a starring role in Fiorentina's Italian Cup semi-final victory over Milan.
Che trova il sorpasso con il colpo di testa di Louise Quinn sull'invito di Bonetti, salta più in alto di tutte, buca Correggiova, il gol che di fatto.
Jeff Shepherd casts his good eye over a very troubled America.
All I have to say to people that already accepted Biden as president is that you are choosing to be a victim of what is called neuro-linguistic programming. It is a MKUltra psychological warfare technique where they combine frequencies that affect the brain with propaganda and trigger words to get people to be what is called compartmentalized into a propagandized perspective of reality that they control. It's mass mind control. That way they can gear the populations for warfare. It's based on MKUltra stuff that we got from Operation Paperclip with the Nazis.
That is a real person.
Wow.
We'll also ask former GAA Intercounty stars Conor Mortimer and Shane McGrath if retiring is the new black.
Can I wait for Bocelli? You can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM and we would love to hear from you. Donegal Cullen and Damien O'Mara taking you right up to Tara Stewart at 7 o'clock.
I feel the programme might have peaked in the opening. How long are we on? Two minutes.
Drop the mic and walk off.
Tell you.
Bocelli, that's a hell of a tune, isn't it?
What would your party piece be now of a night out?
Oh, in terms of being able to perform?
Yeah, would you give that a shot now? Would you be brave enough to even attempt it?
No, I've actually stood on a team bus and sang Molly Malone to the team of the Wild Rover, which is actually really hard
to
do.
Difficult. That's like trying to tap your head and rub your stomach at the same time. It's impossible.
Can I give it a blast?
I've
been a Wild Rover for many a year. I spent all my money on whiskey and beer. And all the lads were there. We want to help him, but something's wrong.
So was this a punishment or was this an initiation?
Yeah, it was a bit of both, really, isn't it? It's get up to the top of the bus and, look, I never had a problem with that, but sometimes you're asked to sing and, to be fair, I couldn't hold a note, as you so you can now testify to.
Yeah, but you would question then why, the judiciary committee of a rugby squad would inflict your singing on them as a punishment to you.
Do you know what, though? You prefer the guys that are brutal. Like, I'll never forget Barry Murphy, of course, of Hermitage Green, got up and he sang, you know, Home and Away?
Oh, and yeah, you and I belong together.
Yeah, and it was brilliant, and he got booed off, because that's not what you want.
I had the pleasure of being in Chicago the night Ireland beat the All Blacks.
Oh.
As did you. Were you at...
No, I
weren't in the hotel.
No.
Joey Carberry, who made his debut that day, sang the theme tune from Friends.
There you go.
And if you ever wanted to just go up and put your arm around somebody and say, Joey, it's going to be okay. You're going to have to live with this for a while. And it was one of those beautiful ballrooms that had like glass from like ceiling to floor, and I was convinced some of it was going to shatter.
Yeah. Always important though, Damien, just to, honestly, even small things like the slagging over it afterwards, because when you come into a squad you don't really know guys all that well, so it's a good way to get to know guys. I'm looking forward to chatting about to Connor and Shane and see, do they do stuff like that in Mayo and Tip?
Well, there we go, we'll come to that later on in the programme. We're going to investigate, speculate and examine, is there something going on in the water around the country that GAA stars are deciding I'm going to jack it in, or what's at stake, because the retirement rate over the last week and a bit seems to be off the charts. That's coming much later on in the programme. Every Thursday we talked to Shep about American sport. I went home and watched. Did you watch CNN last night?
Yeah, it was incredible.
I like, what is going on in the world?
And yeah.
come here, like, you and I aren't going to solve this between now and 7 o'clock, but it just was mind-blowing.
It was incredible to watch, but we did find an Irish hero. What about Donny Sullivan?
So come here, 2020 took Fungi away from us. And 2021 has given us Donny, who's on the Late Late Show tomorrow night.
No way.
It's like some kind of like Kerry serendipity. You know, 2020 took it away. 2021 has delivered. Fair play. Do you know what I liked about Donny last night? There was no sense of bullshit about him. It was like other lads were getting a bit panicked. Yeah. Donny was a man who has seen things. He has seen Last Orders on Christmas Eve. He has seen what life is like in Coppers. He is a man who has tried to get a kebab in Abercrombie at a certain time of the night, and he was not fazed at all. He was just rational and chilled to the max.
But he was asking the good questions. Then on top of it, wasn't he? Like, he was really drawing the best out of everyone. I thought he was incredible. I can't actually wait to watch him. He was a bit of a hero.
Is there any other country in the world, though, that takes such an almost sycophantic pleasure out of seeing one of our own people on the television?
Honestly, the only thing would have been better if he was in a Kerry jersey.
Well, actually, like, I actually tweeted that. It was going to be...
You know
the lads who always turn up in the background at the majors? Yes. And, like, my golf-watching experience is not the same unless there's a fella rocking a vintage Kerry jersey in the background.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's like seeing your mates on television. It's like, you know, so...
Yeah, but I know we're, you know, having a bit of fun, but I'm looking forward to chatting to Shep later on to get the kind of sentiment on the ground and see how they're all doing.
Yeah, there's an awful lot going on in the world. It feels almost like we're going back to where we were last March, where the sports bulletins and the news and everything was just a succession of stuff that's either being postponed or being cancelled.
Yeah.
The big one today is the situation in Japan, and I'm finding it, again, we're going to come back to the same conversation we had earlier in the week about finance and economics dictating sporting events going ahead. You've got Tokyo, a state of emergency announced in Tokyo, and still the local organising committee and people that have a hand to play in the organising of the Olympics are saying, lads, it's not even in doubt. Everything is definitely going to go ahead.
Yeah, it is. It's hard to see, Damien, but then you start looking at different ways. Are we going to get an Olympics with no crowd? Is that what we're looking at? Is that something that would be of interest? Watching the World Championships in Doha, where there was very little crowd, the athletes still performed and it was great to watch, but I think when you go to, look, we've fought it out about the lines and about pinnacles of careers, and I presume it's the exact same for every Olympic athlete. You want it to be a special occasion in your life, and you want to represent yourself, your family and your country on the biggest stage in front of packed stadiums.
Yeah, and then it comes back to, and again, it's a crude way of looking at the world, but it's probably the most realistic way of looking at it as well. You've got one broadcaster, their broadcast deal, their rights deal is $1 billion.
Wow.
That's a big check to write if you're the IOC, if you don't have something in some way, shape or form. But when you look at the figures, now, again, I know it's all relative, but you're looking at cases of, like, I think 2,500 people in Tokyo alone yesterday, the greater metropolitan area alone, and safety is going to dictate what happens, but I don't think it's going to be anything like what we would have seen in Rio or certainly in London a couple of years back.
Agreed, and look, it's Ruby's point, you know, of when does sport turn into entertainment, and when is there an onus on the athlete to actually go out maybe in an empty stadium and perform? I know it's ruthless, it's harsh, but if they could actually lift the nations by their performance or... You know, I know it's a cold way of looking at it, but I think, you know, more and more there's a requirement.
And it's like you've touched upon, once an Olympian, always an Olympian. And, you know, the amount of people that I know who have represented Ireland and have, like, the five rings tattooed somewhere on their body. And, you know, I know now the IOC give you this OLY that you can have after your name, so you could be Dunico O'Callaghan OLY once you've been an Olympian. If it came to be an Olympian in an empty Olympics or not being an Olympian, I think the vast amount of athletes would take the empty Olympics.
100%. Look, honestly, Damien, I can tell you from, look, it's not to the same extent, and team sports are a little bit different, but you are ruthless. And when it comes to it, you probably don't even notice the crowd. You are so driven, selfish, geared towards the moment. It's brilliant to have the crowd afterwards and the incredible buzz of it, but... Okay, I'm probably just talking it up to make it sound as if it would be great if it wasn't there, but I think we're at a point where we just need to probably get by.
Yeah, Liverpool's FA Cup tie against Aston Villa tomorrow night is in doubt. There's games again falling like flies as a result of COVID outbreaks, and again, fitness and health and well-being is paramount. Arsenal taking out a short-term loan of £120 million sterling in order to be able to tie them over on the debt they have to finance on the Emirates Stadium. So like that gives you a bit of a jolt about the lack of fans and the financial implications and reality of what life is like for Premier League clubs. You can only imagine what it's like then. You go Championship, League One, League Two, League of Ireland. You know, yeah. It's a big deal.
It is so testing for clubs out there. And it is, like, I think we probably think it's a wash with money. You know, big clubs in the Premier League that, like, the likes of Arsenal. But then does that, does that ripple down towards, managers being able to make signings? Does Ozil become even a bargain bin now and just get rid of him, cover some of the money?
Okay, now one of the big stories at home today, a man whose career you made, let's be very honest, Paul O'Connell, no confirmed this was kept remarkably quiet, that this came as somewhat of a bolt from the blue for a lot of people earlier today. So Paul O'Connell, installed by Irish head coach Andy Farrell as the national side's new forwards coach. Simon Easterby, who had been carrying that role, is going to switch his focus to defence. Big talking point in rugby today, and no more so at Leinster's press conference in advance of their game against Ulster tomorrow, when Leo Cullen, a man who knows a little bit about forward play, asked for his perspective on this new appointment.
Paulie is, someone with so much playing experience, and he's had his time as well. He did his stint with the 20s and had his stint in France as well. So, but the sounds of it, he's been accumulating bits of knowledge over the last couple of years. So, in terms of what he bring to the group, he's so much experience that he can pass on to lots of young players coming through now. I think it should be a very, very positive step for that national coaching group.
Would you echo that?
Yeah, I absolutely would, but I wouldn't think Paul's going in there to be a cheerleader for the group. He's not afraid to make the hard calls, and he's not afraid to seek improvement. And look, if one thing that hasn't probably been as good as we'd like since moving from Joe, it's our ability, Damien, you know better than anyone, to launch. So we haven't, our line-out hasn't probably been as strong as we're used to, and that leaves us, we're a team that probably, under Joe Schmidt, we used to score an awful lot of scores from maybe phase one to kind of six, which are that's down to coaches. But everyone's questioning Mike Catt, but Mike Catt can't do his job if you're not giving him proper ball. And that's one area that Paulie will certainly add value in the line-out. And we've been lucky to have Devon Toner, but I think it's brilliant for the likes of James, Ian Henderson, but even the younger group below it, the Thomas O'Hearns, the Ryan Beards. And look, it won't stop at line-outs. He's an incredible man. He's an incredible person to be around. He seeks perfection. And I think not only do we have the right people now on the bus, but we have people in the correct place. I think putting Simon into defence, they've worked so well together over the years. John Fogarty, I like the look of this ticket. And I think, I can't speak highly enough of him, as never mind a player, as a man. So I think we've a great guy to lead us out there.
We're a month out from the Six Nations. The squad go into camp at the end of January. It's a very, very quick turnaround this year from the provincial games into the international game. It's going to take a little bit of time for his fingerprints to be seen, though.
Yeah, it will, but look, I'll be honest, it's not like he's been sitting around, you know what I mean, and had been removed from rugby. He's not that type of a fella. I bet you, I can bet he's always been on Sports Code. He's always been cutting up tape. He knows exactly what he wants. And the thing about it, what always I found incredible about Paul is he's not afraid to ask the questions, even of opposition teams. You're coming off, games against the Ospreys, and you might have played against Alan Wynne-Jones, and you can hear Paulie asking him, why did you call that line out in that position? You know what I mean? And he's constantly, he's a student of the game and wants to get better. So I think you're right. You could give the old cushion of, they need time to bed in, but not at international rugby anymore. They have to hit their straps straight away, and I wouldn't doubt he can do that.
And very briefly, obviously he's a new recruit to the IRFU today. Dan McFarland has extended his contract with Ulster by 2 years. good signings, yeah. good appointments, but you would wonder, and again, I'm not privy to what's going on behind the scenes, but you have a whole host of very prominent players are out of contract in the summer. That business would normally be done at this stage, and I would wonder, has there been a succession of agents on the phone to Lansdowne Road today wondering, hang on a second, what's the story here with coaches being put in place when you've got Peter O'Mahony, Johnny Sexton, Tadhg Furlong, CJ Stander, other players who certainly deals haven't been announced publicly yet?
Yeah, I think you could be right. I've no doubt in it. But I think as well, Damien, it comes down to maybe your priority list. If you're able to say, look, this is what we have. We've Paul O'Connell at national level. We've a super coach in Dan McFarlane who's done incredible work. And then you can start using these guys to see the pathway for certain players and get their opinions on certain ones. I think it's very important, especially when it comes to the top. It has to be led from the top down. And Dan McFarlane, to be fair, he's done it all with Irish under-20s, with Connacht. He spent a bit of time in Scotland as well. And to be fair, it's his fingerprint all over Ulster at the moment. Mm. He does deserve an awful lot of credit for what he's done with them. And now it's at that point where he has to push on. You know what I mean? He needs success now.
Okay, very, very briefly, players aren't going to get the money that they've been on previously. That's the reality of where elite sport is at the moment. You look at your Sextons, O'Mahony, Stander, Tadhg Furlong, Keane Healy, Ian Henderson, all big name players. Do you expect any of them to be playing somewhere else next year?
I wouldn't be surprised. I really wouldn't. I think from a player's point of view, you know how well you're looked after in Ireland. But like we were saying there about Arsenal, about the Olympics, you know, times have changed. So it's, you know, there is a balancing act with the players. But then again, as we've seen even with Glasgow, you know, some other teams can smell blood in the water when it comes to picking up talent, and that's going to happen. And look, I'll be honest with you, I don't fault players for trying to secure their future by, you know, of course you want them all here, but you do want them for what they put their bodies through. And I view salaries different. I actually think a rugby player or any sports person pay is nearly, it's respect for what they put their body through.
Okay.
Because they're going to carry it for all time, you know. And I think, you know, I know everyone talks about wages, but I do think, you know, for what our rugby players provide and our athletes provide, they deserve to be well looked after.
And so say all of us. We've a break to take, and we're going to chat to Republic of Ireland international Louise Quinn on the far side of this.
Game on 2FM with Green Fern. Snack smart with Green Fern's new high protein snacking range, available in selected Tesco, Super Value and convenience stores nationwide. Game on, European football.
Tonight, Florentina booked their place in the Italian Super Cup final. Louise Quinn headed home the winner on the 65th minute, and we are delighted the Irish defender joins us now. Louise, how are you?
Donica, how's it going? How are you, Damien?
We're great.
Hi,
we're
Louise.
Great. Congrats, well done. Must be an incredible, myself, Damien sent me on the clip of your goal last night. It must be an incredible feeling to score such an important one.
Yeah, it was nice to get on the score sheet, of course. I missed the sitter earlier in the game, so I really had to make up for it in that case. And yeah, listen, and it was, you know, for the team, I think it was just well deserved that we got 2-1 up. And then, you know, could have been more, and then they started putting a bit of pressure on us at the end. But yeah, just a really important and good game. And now, yeah, the Super Cup final on Sunday against Juventus. So, you know, that's just destined for a big game and a tough game.
Yeah, will be incredible. Louise, I'm always interested, especially with soccer, with goals from set piece. Can you tell us the amount of work that goes into your goal like that last night?
Yeah, it is. It is something that we definitely work on, you know, on weekly, you know, try changing up the set pieces or just keep it really simple. And that was actually, you know, what we did last night was just going to keep the set pieces simple. And for me, you know, it really is. Obviously, it's a massive part of my game to, you know, to keep the goals out. But if I don't get on the score sheet, I'm almost disappointed. You know, I feel like I can be such a threat from those areas. And so I think definitely, you know, we were even joking around today. The coach was talking about, you know, it was one of the reasons that he signed me. And You know, so the girls are joking, you know, that I'm one of the best in Europe at it, and you know, so we're hoping the old Ballon d'Or for it is going to come through, you know, for that sort of stuff. But it's good, and I think it is such a strong part of my game, so I just want to help out, you know, any team I can with that sort of stuff.
So instead of complimenting you and congratulating you on what was like your second goal of the season, we should be chastising you that it's only your second goal of the season.
Third goal there.
Oh, no, you see, sorry, the newspaper articles all said second. Yeah. Okay, I've been sold a pony by the newspapers.
No, I've got one in different competitions now. So one in the league, one in Champions League, and now one in the Super Cup. So
how are you enjoying life in Italy? It sounds like there's a great energy off you, and who wouldn't want to be based up around that part of the world and enjoying life as much as you can, albeit in the current climate?
Yeah, I think just, you know, as of recently, just before Christmas, you know, a few weeks before Christmas, I think I've kind of finally felt a bit more settled, to be honest. It was definitely a massive change for me in terms of the environment, the weather, the style of football, you know, settling in through COVID, leaving the family and, you know, not knowing when or how you can get back and... But it's, you know, it's really starting to come good. And, you know, you see the Italians have been, you know, have been brilliant and kind of welcomed me with open arms. There's a lot of kind of similarities between the Irish and Italians, really, like, you know, to try leave a conversation. It's always like, yeah, ciao, I gotta go. Same way as Irish, you're like, blah, 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 blah.
It's the Irish mammy saying bye 20 times before they actually let you go. But when you went over, and I know you've talked about this to us in the past, but like how big, did you see it as a risk or just a new opportunity, or, you know, particularly like how prominent is the women's game within the soccer culture in Italy, which we know it's like a second religion compared to what you would have been used to with, you know, Arsenal and the success you had there over the years?
Yeah, it was definitely, I was slightly coming into the unknown, I guess. I did the coverage for the World Cup and Italy were just such an up and coming team in that tournament and probably did better than I think everyone expected them to do. But as you say, it is a religion here and especially in Florence, you know, they are crazy about their football. You know, they're really passionate supporters and so you do kind of sometimes feel that pressure, you know. Sometimes when we're going into game, the coach talks about, you know, this is for the city. It's on both men's and women's side. They really are passionate. But in terms of on the women's side, you do see that passion, but there still needs to be more backing, definitely. So in terms of like the professionalism compared to England, it still needs a lot of work and still a lot more investment. But at the same time, they're still televising most games, or they're online. There's a lot of big teams, obviously Juventus, AC Milan, Inter Milan, Fiorentina, Sassuolo, Roma. So really there's a lot of big clubs there backing the women's team, but they are just a bit behind the times, if I'm being honest.
And it's interesting you say that, because so many headlines were generated over the weekend about Barcelona's women's team playing in the Nou Camp, and I think it was the first Barcelona team to play there in 2021, and it's the 50th anniversary of the team's foundation. But then when you scrape away from it and delve into it, it's like, well, no, the basketball team has more prominence, the hockey team has more prominence, and the women's soccer team is much further down the pecking order than some of the lip service that was paid over the weekend is. So do you see a willingness initially to try and push the game on?
Yeah, I see. I absolutely see it there. And you can see that from the owners in Fiorentina as well. They are really, really passionate about their football. And, so they're just currently building a new training facility, and there is going to be a section itself there for the women's team as well. So it is something that they're absolutely backing, but it is still just going to take that little bit more time. you know, currently even in terms of kind of the facilities. So we play on turf still quite a bit, so on synthetic grass, and some, even the quality of that sometimes isn't great, like around the country. So there's still a lot of stuff that needs some upgrading, but they are getting there, and it's great to see kind of how that is growing, and their national team is just so strong here. And I think it's something as well that basically the majority of the entirety of the Italian national team are in Italy, I think, apart from two players maybe, and they've only gone in this year. So they've done very well to keep it, you know, a very kind of home based, and really kind of picking up the quality with a lot of youth Italians in the teams.
And nothing gets youth into the game more, you know better than anyone, than success and the Super Cup coming up. How are you fixed for it? Obviously, the league probably hasn't gone as well as you'd like. So is this the tangible goal this year, Louise?
Yeah, I think, from that performance last night, it was really, really promising. It was definitely up there with one of our best performances of the season, and we were just playing lovely stuff. And you know, when we've got those players ticking, it's great. You know, we've got the Portuguese captain, you know, in central midfield, Claudia Neto, and you know, she's phenomenal. I played against her in Sweden years ago, and she was just by far up there one of the best players I played against, and now thankfully I get to play with her. Yeah, it's it has, and it was a really kind of challenging thing. I think we were, you know, extra motivated. So we have, unfortunately, been hit by COVID in the team as well. So our head coach has tested positive, and three players. So we've really had to manage that, and then also we've had an ACL injury in the last week as well. So it's been a really, really tough, literally a tough 10 days, 2 weeks for us. But when we were, you know, kind of celebrating that win last night, there was a real togetherness and passion about it. And, you know, so for us, it's definitely there for us for the taking.
And just on that, I can understand injuries happen, but just on your head coach, what happens there? Is there a greater onus on you, Louise, as the players, to take a little bit more ownership now? Because it can feel like the sub teacher in school when someone else steps up.
Yeah. So the assistant has really stepped up, and our video analysis, he's brilliant. He's kind of been able to mix in both, doing that video analysis, but also a good part of the coaching as well. And yeah, it's definitely where we've had to step up and just kind of try do those things on the pitch without him. Now, to be fair to him, on the phone to him there, they put him on a speaker, and he's chatting away, so he's making sure he's got his input, and doing everything he can. But this is just another one of the challenges that we've got to face, and everyone's taking it really well and adapting to it. And you know, it's definitely kind of one of those experiences you'll never forget. But it's been really different, but you know, we've got to manage.
And how, I don't want to talk necessarily about how great is the pressure, because it's a massive opportunity to win silverware, and it's a massive opportunity this weekend to bring silverware back to a club that has won, you know, the Italian Cup within the last couple of years, Coppa Italia, Serie A, that there has been a culture of winning there in recent years, albeit you face the team Juve that have dominated Italian women's football since.
Yeah, there is a real rivalry between these two teams. And for us, because we maybe haven't done it as in well in the league as we would have hoped, we really underperformed in a few games. So this is kind of putting it to light now what we can really do. I think the win in Champions League just before Christmas really put a motivation behind the team, and then we've been easily motivated now this week, you know, with everything that we've faced. And Juve are one of the top teams, and again, they're the backing that they have, and the players that they have, they're fantastic. But you know, this is one of those rivalries that it's always going to be a really hard fought game, and a lot of passion behind it, and a lot of skill. And yeah, it's just going to be exciting, you know, because the last time I played these as well, I got sent off, so I'm ready to kind of play a 90 against them now and really kind of give it to them. So
what did you get sent off for, Louise?
Just last player back, and, you know, and one of them doing a bit of a, you know, a good old roly poly, and she was gone off the pitch by 20 yards. Already she rolled that much, but sure, look, that's it.
One of those ones that if it was the opponent who did it, you'd definitely be calling for a red card quite as passionately if it's yourself.
I tell some of my young girls to get up now when they hit the ground.
Yeah. Brilliant, good on you.
Can I just ask you, like, we've just come through this time of the year where, you know, normally it's a time for reflection and a time to look back on what's gone on before. Where do you see Irish women's football being at? And even, you know, looking at it in our house before Christmas, and not necessarily the novelty, but the joy, the excitement that you can now buy an Irish women's soccer jersey. And, you know, we got to look at the games on television over the course of the year and the crowds that were at the qualifiers before the shutdown obviously happened. Are you positive about the direction Irish women's football is heading in?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the growth has been incredible. I think the timing of the 20 by 20 campaign was just, you know, it was really perfect. And obviously it's still a really tough one for us to take, that we weren't able to qualify when really we should have. I just think kind of the lack of experience of maybe being in that position, and again we got a lot thrown at us, you know, during that campaign, you know, having a manager and then not having a manager and having to then, you know, go through that whole time of looking for someone, like you're looking for Vera basically. And it was a really, you know, a really, really difficult period, but, you know, something that we've got to take now. And, you know, and that's really it is lesson learned there, you know. If you don't win, you learn, kind of stuff. So yeah, and for me, I said it at the end of the game, it's been as devastating as it was, it was probably just one of the most encouraging campaigns in terms of where Ireland has come and where women's football has come, that the growth has been huge, and the interest, and hopefully just kind of inspiring others and getting the backing, you know, of the country. And yes, we kind of left a little bit of disappointment there, but, you know, I think we've really got some people on our side for the next campaign to be like, right, we didn't do it then, so let's do it next time and carry on, really. It's been phenomenal, and I couldn't have been, you know, more kind of proud of the support and the backing that we got. And they were definitely missed for those last few games, but, you know, hopefully we get everyone back soon.
Louise, that's important because it is driven by your performance on the pitch, but you deserve the support. And having someone like Vera, can you give us some insight into her, you know, management style? To be fair, myself and Damien chatted to her before, and she nicely put you in your box, Damien, a few times.
Completely put me in my box. I tried to explain. I was trying to explain to somebody afterwards that, you know, the job of sometimes playing devil's advocate in situations like this,
it wasn't worth it.
Yeah, she went like six inches over the ball, and you think the one that got you sent off rolled around? I was nearly in tears here in the studio.
No, that sounds like Vera. All right, she really is kind of a, to me, I felt like just a breath of fresh air. She was really kind of, she was to me nicely honest. You know, she'd be like, you know, why would you play Louise a ball like that? She's not good at that. But play a ball in the air and she'll be, you know, she'll be anyone. So she'll always kind of be like, that's not her strength, but this is. So let's do this. You know, so she's trying to find the strengths, you know, in your game. And you know, I think it's down to us that, you know, to not take some things to heart. You know, we all have weaknesses and we all have then incredible strengths. And she, I think, did quite well at trying to really kind of pick them out. And
but Louise, players
also for,
sorry, on, yeah. players appreciate that type of honesty, don't they? Like, you know, I just know from, I love when a coach talks to me like that and actually points out, you know, that's an area you probably need improvement, and then you can show them up.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I'm the same. That's how I kind of like it. I don't really like when, you know, when anyone kind of beats around the bush, but just how she did it, she always backed it up with, you know, something, to me, always something positive, you know, that she could find from it. And she knew where my strengths lie, and made sure to kind of make them shine. And she, you know, she really wanted that for everyone. You know, and she's definitely someone that just goes by instinct as well. You know, so sometimes there were some kind of, you know, late tactical changes that maybe she thought just had to be made. And, you know, that even happened in the last game against Germany. You know, we changed things up kind of the day before, the, you know, day and a half before the game. But it did turn out to be, you know, against the top side, one of our kind of top performances. I know it was, you know, defensively a lot to do, but, you know, we really kind of put ourselves forward in that game. And but then also she puts things really simply as well. She kind of made, you know, put the basics down for us, and we'd be doing video analysis, and she would ask you about certain passes, and she kind of had almost levels. She'd be like, that's a, you know, that's a neutral pass, that's a good pass, that's a really good pass, and then that's an excellent pass. So she's like, in the situation, where's the excellent pass? So we look at things, and, you know, we try to find out actually what is the best sort of method we can do. Okay, maybe play one neutral pass to then find that excellent pass. And it just kind of simplified things.
Brilliant.
You know, and sometimes we needed that. You know, we some of the girls haven't got some of that kind of, the professional training or just the experience. And you know, we thankfully have a lot of girls that have gone away now, but then it's just down to experience as well.
Just the night she was on with us, she spoke an awful lot about the ability to improve the game and the need to, you know, build on what has been on, you know, I know there's disappointment of not qualifying, but what has been an immensely successful campaign in terms of the development of the squad and the performances. And then she was obviously fairly non-committal when we asked her the direct question about whether she was going to extend her contract. But from the way you're chatting, it would be really important for a figure like that to remain with the squad and remain within Irish women's football.
Yeah, I just think obviously we need that consistency. We need it on the pitch, but we also need it off the pitch. And it's been something that we haven't been able to get, you know, sort of off the pitch with, you know, a lot of changes happening. And I think we've taken a lot of, you know, hardship and stuff during the last few years. But yeah, for me now, it definitely needs that consistency. And you know, I think when you check Vera's, you know, track record, she's always kind of left massive positives behind in the countries that she's worked with. So, you know, the likes of South Africa, and then obviously the, you know, the Dutch national team. You know, she was a massive trigger for the Dutch national team to, from where they were to where they are now. She really laid some of those foundations for them. So, you know, you want her to be able to do the same in Ireland, and you do see that she's passionate, and then she has, you know, Eileen Gleeson to back her up, who can do so much groundwork, you know, in Ireland, and who knows the game and the league and everything like the back of her hand. So, you know, we've really just got to kind of, keep pushing that forward, and keep some consistency, and then we can kind of keep getting that backing, you know, because you do want it to get there faster. You know, it would be a dream of mine to be able to come back and play in Ireland again, you know, to kind of, if I could finish my career there, and if it's on an even sort of semi-professional basis, you know, that would be even better, to be able to finally come back to where I started my career and see growth. Whereas if I were to come back now, it would almost be in the same place where I left it, you know, 10 years ago, 9 years ago. So, you want to see that.
On that, Louise, like I think it was a terrible shame this year that the expansion of the Women's National League and some of the clubs that came into it seemed to have great ambitions to, promote it better and, integrate the women's teams alongside their men's teams. And obviously, that whole thing had to be torn up. But, what are the principal challenges do you see that are facing the league, or the principal, are there relatively simple fixes or straightforward fixes that can just help it move to a significantly higher level?
Yeah, I think, of course, there can be some simple changes, I suppose, as much as as the club and the players themselves can do. I know that a lot of them are either, school, college, they work, but I think it's about really building up the community around you and trying to get that interest from there and building then youth teams to come up. And I think that is, sometimes it is just your own self-sacrifice and time, I guess, by going into schools, by going into, to other clubs to become kind of role models, in that town. And thankfully I've seen that recently in Blessington, where I live now. They've started up a girls team and it's just fantastic. They've now got a few teams going, and that's just something I've wanted to see, for years. And it was something I wasn't sure how it was going to go about, but a couple of people kind of messaged me and, were there. They were like, oh, we're thinking of doing this. Could you maybe come and talk to the girls? And straight away I was there as soon as I could to try help out. And that's what I want to keep continuing to do in the future, when I'm maybe especially home more, is to grow that kind of women's football community in Blessington and then in Wicklow and to get it to expand. So for me, it's the clubs. I already know the clubs do so much, and Piemont is my old club, and Dennis Cummins, the ex-chairman of the club there, he's incredible and gives his heart and soul to that club. But it has to be so much self-sacrifice, and it is really tough to see that for the girls, because I know that they give so much, but they've got to still pay. To play so much, so it's actually still a massive monetary problem as well. So there needs to be that push to get one big sponsor that's going to take that chance. There's no doubt about it. It is a big investment that needs to be done, but to me, you've got to look at the growth of women's football in the last few years, and it's just growing and growing. So for me, and it's not going anywhere, so you just need someone to kind of put their confidence in it, and make that backing and make it easier, for clubs. And it definitely is tough when some of the really kind of talented players head off to England, and that happens as well in the League of Ireland. But there can still be a great foundation there for female players, and we've really got to push that, and you really just want to see that change.
Louise, so important that we get people like you back in the game, but before that, you're leading with your actions, and to all the boys and girls listening there, I know you haven't heard your goal last night, so we'd like to play it for you.
Che roba il sorpasso con il colpo di testa di Louise Quinn sull'invito di Bonetti. Salta più in alto di tutte, buca Corenciova, il gol che di fatto.
Louise, my Italian isn't great, but I did see the goal. It was a hell of a finish.
Yeah, it was good. Now just to get me ahead. Now, as I said, I missed the sit earlier, so it was much needed.
Louise, thank you so much, and continued success. Best of luck in the Super Cup, and every time you tug out in green, we're so proud of you. Keep going, and thanks for joining us on Game On.
Lovely, thanks for having me, guys.
That's Louise Quinn joining us from Italy, and we're going to switch attention to North America very quickly.
FM. Game On 2FM with Green Farm. Fuel your day the healthy way with Green Farm's on-the-go chicken bites. 100% natural and packed with protein.
The man open left.
Game On in America.
You weren't weren't joking, Damien, when you said we'd be back quick. Okay, it's time to cross the Atlantic and join our fantastic teammate, Jeff Shepherd. Happy New Year, Shep. How are you?
I'm doing great, guys. Happy New Year.
Shep, I know we're going to chat NFL playoffs and all the exciting stuff that's going on, but it would be wrong not to chat and get a bit of the sentiment of what's going on the floor after last night's clash between rioters and the police in the capital.
Yeah, Donners, I guess the best way that I could say it is it's probably the saddest and, you know, maybe scariest day we've had in America since 9/11. Oh. You know, because it's really, similarly, it's an attack on kind of what we are, what we stand for, what we're supposed to be as a country and as a people. You know, I mean, I don't think anybody wants to say, you know, everybody has to believe a certain way or act a certain way. That's certainly not, you know, what this country was founded on. But there's a degree to which you're supposed to disagree. And obviously that was breached yesterday across the board in our nation's capital, in places that are the hallmarks of democracy. And again, you know, the things that we believe in as a country.
But when we look at it, people have talked about the, you know, economic challenges and everything else that's going to face Joe Biden when he comes into office. But you look at last night and you look at the reaction, which has been massively divisive for all the people condemning Trump, and rightly in the minds of most, there's as many people that are defending the right to protest. So Joe Biden's greatest challenge is to reunite an America which is divided far more than any of us ever could have comprehended.
Yeah, I mean, Damien, that's a good point because, and look, we talk a lot about U.S. politics on this show, you know, over the last couple of years. And I really always, and I've said this to Andrew, our producer, many, many times, I really try to walk a line. I don't, I mean, unless it's something completely, you know, grievous, I do like to kind of try to be fair when I can. And I think that's a good point because there are a lot of people right now claiming that all protesters need to be arrested and shot on sight, and they didn't have anything to say about that in the summer. Now, you can protest for different reasons, but if buildings are being lit on fire and buildings are being taken over, that's not really a peaceful protest. I don't care what the cause is. And so it's kind of hard to play it both ways. Again, last night was the culmination of just so much foolishness and ridiculousness and incitement and, you know, attacks. Again, these are attacks on the basis of what the idea of America is. You know, I mean, the concept that, you know, it's a free democratic country. We have these elections. You know, some of the claims that some of these politicians making make absolutely no sense. How you can say that the ballots, you know, were rigged, the elections were rigged in the presidential race, but not in the race that their own name was on. Like, they won re-election in some of these elections, but they're claiming the presidential race was rigged. It doesn't make any sense. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't know if it's they're just trying to score political points, they're just trying to be seen, you know, positively in the light of President Trump's supporters, because like it or hate it, whatever it is, the dude turned out a whole lot of voters this year. And, mm-hmm. you know, these at the end of the day, people are, you know, going to try to keep their jobs. And so there's just so much involved in it. It's just sickening, though, to see all of this play out. And, you know, unfortunately, 4 people lost their lives. You know, that's tragic. Yeah. Many, many people arrested. You know, the National Guard's been called in today. Thankfully, after the vote was certified last night, the president put out a statement saying, you know, there's going to be a peaceful transition of power. But unfortunately, there are still 2 weeks to go. Mm-hmm. And I don't say this lightly. God only knows what could happen in those 2 weeks.
Yeah. And Shep, on it, we've seen it with Milwaukee and we saw it last night with the Miami Heat and the Boston Celtics. Sport can galvanize a country as well. And them actually just going out and playing last night was quite important.
Yeah, you know, I mean, we talked about the discussions we were going to have on the show today previewing yeah. the NFL playoffs kind of before all of this went haywire. I mean, it was kind of out there on the radar. And it's kind of like, God, I would just really love to be able to come on the show one day and just talk about the NFL. Like, I just cannot wait till we get back to that point, you know?
Okay. Well, will we drive on and talk about the NFL with the few minutes that we have? In a way, remarkable that they've got to this point in the season. And I know an awful lot of the headlines initially revolved around the fact that the Patriots weren't there. But how wide open a race to Super Bowl I'm going to say 2021 because I can't work out the Roman numerals quickly.
Right, yeah. That's acceptable because I'm over here and I don't even know which one it is.
55.
Yeah, there's like an X, I think. But, yeah, so, look, I mean, I think it is, the NFC is completely wide open. I mean, I think the hardest part, obviously, is someone could potentially have to go into northern Wisconsin, which is basically Canada, which is basically the North Pole, you know, in late January and go beat Aaron Rodgers with the potential of having a huge snow game being played. And then the AFC, as we've talked about, you know, the Chiefs have the best player and have the best offense, but the Buffalo Bills are just, you know, rampaging teams right now. I mean, they are one Kyler Murray Hail Mary away from winning like 9 straight games. I mean, they are probably the hottest, best team in football right now. So I think the AFC's, you know, wide open too, but I think those two teams are the best. Guys, I mean, look, we have a double, triple header this weekend, you know? And so if you enjoy, you know, I'm not exactly sure what the temperature's like in Ireland this weekend, but if it's cold and rainy or snowy or whatever's going on over there.
We had snow in Cork today, Shep. Snow in Cork. It was brilliant.
Snow in Cork. The Republic is snowing. So, look.
Cold and rainy. You're describing our summer.
Well, that's a valid point, too. I've been there twice in the summer, and it's quite cold, yes. But you know what I'm saying. I mean, there's a great opportunity that if you made a New Year's resolution to get out and go get some exercise, let me tell you something. I would do it tomorrow. I would do it early on Saturday, because then you could just sit around for like 20 hours just watching American football and just eat some chicken wings, drink some beer. I mean, that's what this country's all about, not what happened yesterday in D.C.
Absolutely. And there is some positive and progressive news in Boston, where the Red Sox have hired Bianca Smith. This is great news, Shep.
Yeah, she's the first African-American woman to be hired to be a hitting coach by a Major League Baseball organization. You know, we've seen guys in the last couple of years. Now, she's going to be stationed in Florida with some of their, you know, kind of like their hitting coach with their prospects. So it'll be that, like, their younger players that are kind of there year-round. But we have seen, you know, in baseball in particular, the Miami Marlins have hired a female general manager. And then, you know, we've got Becky Hammon with the San Antonio Spurs. She actually was coaching a game last weekend when Greg Popovich got ejected. So she became the first woman to, you know, be a quote-unquote head coach in a game. She will be the first female head coach in the NBA. I cannot believe she's not been selected to be a coach as of yet. I mean, she is Greg Popovich's right-hand woman in San Antonio, and he is one of the best coaches we've had, you know, in recent NBA history. We've got female coaches at certain levels of the NFL, in certain position groups, and so, you know, that ceiling has been getting cracked over the last couple of years, but kudos to the Red Sox. And look, you know, I mean, we talk about some of the other, you know, social issues that we have before. The Boston Red Sox and that city haven't always had the greatest relationship with the African-American community and their athletes. And so it's kudos to them for being the first ones to take that leap.
Yeah, hear, hear. Shep, thanks so much. Enjoy your weekend. I hope you have the coach reinforced for a double header, a double triple header.
You're That's body shaming, Dunica.
Shep, thanks as always.
Appreciate it, guys.
Okay, that's it from myself and Damien. A massive thank you to Andrew O'Connor and Laura Lee. We're back tomorrow at 6. The brilliant Harris Shorts up next.
Game on 2FM with Green Fern. Green Fern's new on-the-go chicken bites are natural,